Welcome to Lusima Podcast. I'm Charles Lusima. I'm going to give this a try, even though I don't feel like I have the mental acuity right now to really explain, at least explain well, what I was thinking or how I was thinking. But I had a long conversation with a model that came in from Australia, and we're just talking about imagery, of course. You know, conversation turned towards the way that I create things, and I was saying that, you know, she asked me, who are my favorite photographers? And I said, well, the historical answer, and it's a truthful answer, I've always liked Avedon and de Marchelier, to a certain extent, like Helmut Newton, these classical, old-school black and white photographers. The reason I like them is because they did such a great job capturing someone's soul, you know, someone's, what's the word? Their photography was so transparent. You could see, it was piercing. You could see right through their lens, right into the soul of their subjects. And they did that so beautifully and so elegantly at the same time. And the funny thing is, I was thinking about my own work, and I was like, oh, yeah, I don't have that. That's not what I do. It's not even close to what I do. In fact, I think I do oftentimes the exact opposite. I layer away that transparency to a certain extent. I don't know if it's I'm hiding myself or that I'm hiding the model, but in either way, definitely there is an illusion that is created that is not transparent, that is not, you're not seeing the model as she really is. And one of the things I often joke about is that if you look at the pictures on the walls, if you come to the studio, every single studio I've ever had, I always hang pictures, my pictures on the walls. And to this day, actually, most of these pictures are exactly the same as the ones that I had in the very first studio, because I never changed them. I never took the pictures out. I never replaced them with new, updated pictures. So if you walk in my studio today, you'll see pictures that I had hanging on the walls from 5 years ago. And the reason is simple. Well, I'm lazy, and also because I actually do have some sort of loyalty to those images, and I have no problem hanging those older pictures up. There's something sentimental and something classical about my older work, which I still like to this day. But if you look at the pictures on the wall, I always say that these pictures represent people that don't exist. Because if you saw these models in person, you'd say, oh, she doesn't really look like that. And whether that's by photography or by retouching, in one way, shape, or form, or another, what I'm trying to do is create this illusion of who this person is, ideally, an idealized version of my subject. And so when you think about what, at least in essence and in spirit, what Avedon and de Marchelier and Helmut Newton, what these guys did, I felt like they peeled back the layers of the onion rather than added more layers to obscure or hide the model. Now, I don't consider the layers that I add to be artificial. It's not how I would describe it, but it's certainly not present, I don't think. That's not how I would describe it, at least. I don't think they're present in the pictures of de Marchelier and in Avedon. I find that in many ways, I'm much more of an illusionist, a magician or an illusionist who presents some version of reality to the world that is not necessarily real. And that is, the irony of that is that, you know, the guys that I do like, the guys that I look up to, they're much more honest, I think, is the word. I don't know. Maybe it's honesty. I don't know if it's honesty or candid or transparent or just real, you know. It's, or less contrived. I hate the word contrived. I would never use that word to describe what I do. But in comparison to what those guys used to do, I would feel that my work is a little bit more by design. It's a little bit more, I guess you could say, contrived, although again, I don't like that word. So let me run through my notes really quickly and see if I've captured the essence of what I'm trying to say. And then I'll try to draw some sort of conclusion. One of the things I was thinking about was, so if you look at my work, it's much more, all right, hang on a second. Let me just go back a little bit. All right, there are quite a few thoughts over here. So one of the things I was writing, as I was taking notes, I was saying that, you know, the world that I present is very pristine. It's almost flawless. And, you know, although there are certain flaws that are starting to show through and starting to kind of leak through, and that is by design, because over time what I'm discovering is that some of these flaws are a little bit more human and create or allow my models or subjects to look a lot more human and less imaginary, I guess is a word. But for the most part, the people that I shoot, they don't really exist, certainly not in the way that they're represented. And then, you know, I think to some level or some extent, I'm hiding behind these layers. And I'm still trying to figure that part out. I try to create things that are images that are a little bit more aspirational rather than images that are a lot more random and impromptu and spontaneous. Like, very little of my work is in the style of, say, Terry Richardson or say, Jürgen Teller. Both of these guys are important, and I'll come back to that in a second. But I don't like what I see a lot of times on the internet, especially on Instagram these days, where people kind of just shoot random things for the sake of shooting random things. Because to me, I've always found that style to be very lazy. And I think it's because the level of photography that I see that is done in that style is a little bit lacking, meaning that the guys who do that kind of style of photography on Instagram, at least, for the most part, I think they do that in order to cover up the fact that they lack certain fundamental photography skills, such as proper lighting, such as proper camera control, and maybe even composition. And most of the time, very often, it is a lack of ability to retouch the image properly. So they kind of throw something out there that's very raw and very unretouched, and then they do it under that guise of, hey, this is like totally real. But what's really happening is that they just don't have that level of skill to be able to manipulate the image properly, either in the camera or in the computer. And I don't like that. To me, that's always felt lazy, you know, like it lacked thought, it lacked forethought, it lacked design, it lacked purpose. So that's not to say, and this is where Jürgen Teller and Terry Richardson come into play, that's not to say that you can't be both. I find that, you know, if you look through images of Jürgen Teller and Terry Richardson, I feel like their imagery is a lot more polished, even though it seems very candid, seems very like random and very eclectic. It certainly has those elements. It's very raw. But at the same time, if you look at if you examine their body of work and if you examine them as photographers, they certainly don't, it's not that they don't know how to do it any other way other than using that hard flash on camera. They choose to do it that way, but even then it's well done. It's not sloppy, you know, which is unfortunately what I find oftentimes on Instagram by lots of photographers that try to copy that style. So it's not that they're mutually exclusive. It's not that you can't get good results doing that style. It's just that most of the time it's not done well. Now, you know, again, I'm not trying to bash anybody's style. That's my cup of tea. And you know, I may not gravitate towards that style, but I certainly respect it. I like it. I like looking at it. In fact, I think there's a lot of Avedon and de Marchelier in that style where it's very, there's a rawness that's much more refined in Avedon and de Marchelier. And I think that Jürgen Teller and Terry Richardson, these kinds of guys, they take it to another level. But like shock value to me doesn't mean anything. Like that's, I think that's, again, this is totally personal preference. It's not my cup of tea. So when you show me something that's very, oh my gosh, what is she doing? Like, that doesn't get me, and that doesn't float my boat, and that's not a picture that I print and hang up on the wall. To me, it's just, you know, kind of like you're just doing it for the value of the shock, but there's no intrinsic other, there's no other intrinsic value to that shock, other shot or shock, other than the fact that it's just strange. And so I've always gravitated towards the prettier imagery, and that's always been my style. And the style of imagery that I like, rather than more of the grotesqueries. And that, I'm not saying that in a negative way. It's just the stuff that, you know, people present and do just to kind of create or evoke a reaction from the audience. But getting back to the value of the layers and what is going on, I don't know. Again, I think that's where I kind of get stuck, but it's not that I'm trying to hide. I really am not, but first of all, like, personality wise, I lack the ability to have the type of, to evoke the type of reaction that would then therefore have any shock value. Like, I'm not the type of personality that can create the environment such as Terry Richardson, and I'm assuming such as Jürgen Teller, to get those shots, to even be in the presence of those shots. So it's not for a lack of photographic skill, more as much as it is a lack of character or personality. I'm just not that kind of guy, so it's difficult for me to create the environment for that. So, you know, it's all a jumbled mess of thoughts, really, and I'm trying to get to the core of it. I'm constantly trying to think, trying to unravel, trying to peel back. I don't know. I can't really describe to you exactly what it is. All I can tell you is that when I create these things, I'm looking for some idealized version of the woman. Like, for example, one of the things that I was talking to this model about right before she left is, you know, there's only like 5 ways to make a girl. Oh, we were looking at the pictures on my table, because I have this table that has a piece of glass over it. And on this table, I placed a bunch of prints. And these prints, you know, one of them has this girl. Oh, well, one of the models that I shot, Holly Parker. She's on the beach. She's laying down. She's very long. It's black and white. She's like, oh, this is a great shot. And I was like, oh, and she said something like, oh, you make her look so long and so, so sexy, and something like to those lines. And I said something like, yeah, there's only like 5 ways to make a girl look long and sexy, but I could show you 100 ways to make a girl look not long and not sexy. Because I think there is, because of, and this is very scientific and very technical, but there's really, you know, if you look at like the way that we're shaped and our joints and then from head to toe, if you want to make us look longer other than like artificially lengthening and liquefying in Photoshop, there really is only like a few angles that really work. And there really only are a few poses, and like the S curve is a classic one, right? Why do you think that a lot of, you know, classically long, tall shots are all done in a certain way? Like, you elongate the neck, you kind of make sure that there's this nice flowy curve to the body, you know, and that is done. It goes from head to waist to legs and toes. They're really only, I mean, I'm exaggerating when I say there's only 5 ways, there are 5 shots, you know, 5 angles or whatnot. But the point is that I have a very specific style and vision of what I think the woman should look like. And I've said this before, I don't want them to look like them. I want them to look like what I think they should look like, which is that I'm exacting an image or an idealized form out of them. So I am a little bit more controlling. I'm going to make them pose in a certain way. I'm going to ask them to move in a certain way. And if I can't get that out of them, then, you know, I might even go so far as to pose them, but it is a very specific lens that I'm looking through. I'm certainly not looking for the eclectic, random quirkiness, you know, laughing shots. I just, you know, have so few of those in my portfolio. I'm looking for this, again, this perfection that I know doesn't exist and I know isn't necessarily her, but I'm trying to exact that out of her. And this is also one of the reasons I said that sometimes I don't like talking to the models. I don't like talking to the models because that talk, like if I know too much about her, it ruins the ideal. It makes it difficult for me to then create that fantasy, which is part of what it is. It is an unrealistic version of what she is. And you either play along and be what I want you to be, or it doesn't come out as well. Because if you are not malleable and not flexible and you can't become that final imagery, I'm not the right photographer to just take you as you are. That's just not who I am. That's just my style. Again, there's nothing right or wrong about it. I'm not trying to enforce or try to make someone to be someone that they're not. I think anybody who comes and shoots with me, they look at my imagery and I think they see a consistent, kind of a fantastic version of these women. And I think to a certain extent, I think they believe that I am. They must. If they don't, then they're missing something. But they have to understand that I am creating that fantasy. It's not that it's not that these women are those things, or, you know, naturally are that final imagery, but it's that I mold them into that. All right, I'm gonna leave that here because I have to go on my ride, and there's also some other things I want to kind of think through before I talk about this. But I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace. Okay, I'm back. If the acoustics sound different, it's because I'm actually at home. The ride ended actually several hours ago, but I didn't have a chance. I didn't have anything to say, to be honest with you. I finished the ride and I thought to myself, okay, so what did I think about? Pretty much nothing. Absolutely nothing. Here's what I thought about. Oh shit, I'm about to get dropped. On these rides, it's especially right now because it's off season. There isn't the whole group anymore. The ride's officially ended. And as a result, the large group that I ride with, they are not there anymore. So I still show up Tuesdays and Thursdays and hope to cobble together a few guys that I see regularly and see if we can ride together. But today was such a small group. I mean, there's five guys, and one of the guys was just killing us, just murdering us on the pulls. And, you know, I rode a total of 9 laps. I think I rode a total of 8 with the group. But it was tough. It was just tough. It was a tough ride. Anyway, so, I mean, the reality is I don't really think much about anything when I'm on the ride. It's much more of a game of survival. So I didn't get to think about anything really all that much. But that being said, I thought about a few things subsequently. And one of the things that I was thinking about was that when earlier I said, you know, I wasn't sure whether or not my pictures looked this way because I was afraid of myself or afraid of the transparency or the honesty. And I think that's not true. I think that's a misrepresentation of what I've done for 7 years. Because the reality is that I've had many opportunities to explore that. And I don't think I've turned away from that honesty or that kind of expression for a lack of honesty or transparency. It's rather that that's not my cup of tea. That's just not what I want to create. It's not what I aspire to. So to say to myself or to say about my work that it, you know, it's just because it's not developed or it's not mature or that it hasn't gotten to where it's supposed to be. I think there are elements of flaws that are starting to shine through some of these images. You know, like here's an example. Sometimes when I'm retouching and I'm looking at certain parts of the face that I typically dodge and burn out and really really smooth out for skin tonality. These days, I ask myself whether or not that actually detracts from the humanity of that face. Meaning, not so much that, not so much in the sense of, oh, does she look less weathered, or does she look like she's less of a person? But, well, actually, no. It's much more like, if I take out this wrinkle, or if I take out this skin tonation issue, or what I perceive as an issue, does it make her look more flat? So from a dimensional perspective, I leave things in because without them, for example, like if you dodge out all the dark circles under people's eyes, like if you just take out everything, you wind up with an eye that looks virtually flat. It's not an eyeball anymore. It's really just a flat surface. And or the bulge underneath the eye disappears. And that's strange, because the reality is eyeballs are round, and when they fit into the socket, typically people have a little bit of darkness under the eyes, just because that's how light bounces off of skin when it's on an uneven surface. Now, if you take that out, like one of my models did that, I gave her pictures, and I think she didn't like that there were certain lines underneath the underneath the eyes. And she actually dodged out all of the dark circles under the eyes completely, like removed every single shadow. And I caught her. I didn't say anything about it because she was a difficult case to begin with. I mean, it was obvious. But so that's an example. And so in general, when I'm retouching these days, I'm trying to keep as much of the humanity, but not in a philosophical way. I'm just trying to keep things looking where they don't look like sketches, or they don't look like they're not real. For example, I was flipping through, and I haven't seen an edition or a copy of W magazine in years, but one of the I saw the most recent edition. I think it was it had Kendall Jenner, and I think maybe it was Gigi Hadid. I'm not sure, on the front cover. And then the thing that struck me the most was they dodged out their kneecaps so that they looked like they didn't have knees. And that to me was really strange. And I don't know how long the industry has been doing this, but joints are supposed to be joints, and I get that joints and ankles and hands and knees and these things aren't terribly attractive, but to remove all of that altogether, it's really crossing the line. I think for me, at least, I draw the line at some point where it's no longer realistic. We're taking pictures of people, not trying to take pictures of like Barbie dolls or Ken dolls or whatever. So there, that was very striking to me, that it just looked really strange. Now, maybe that's the industry standard now, to dodge out all the uneven surfaces and shadows and highlights on the knees and elbows and wherever else there's a crease. But I try to retain as much of the reality of my imagery as possible. So anyway, that's the philosophy behind the way that I approach reality and how I do feel like on some level over time, I've left more and more flaws, right? So generally these things are flaws. They you wouldn't categorize them under like features. And it's just that I feel like there are certain things that allow us to perceive more dimensionality rather. So I don't want to take that part out. Now, getting back to the question at hand, which is, well, Charles, is it that you're afraid of the truth, who you are and who they are and how to portray them? Is that what you're running away from, and that's why you're doing things this way? I'm not really running away from anything. I've just gravitated towards, like, for example, I can't, if all I shot were landscapes, you couldn't then ask me, well, is it because you don't like people that you don't shoot landscapes, or that you don't shoot portraits, right? So I mean, it's kind of the wrong way to look at it. if I become Ansel Adams, you don't ask Ansel Adams, hey, you know, were you molested as a kid? Because, you know, maybe you have some like childhood trauma and that's why you, you know, like shooting people. No, it has nothing to do with it. It just has to do with the fact that he's really good at shooting landscapes. That's just his cup of tea. That's what he does. And so rather than coming at it from a detraction, from a, well, is it because of something else? I think 6-7 years of history creates its own trend, creates its own, you know, specific style. And I'm not talking about an outside trend. I'm talking about an internal trend. After 6-7 years, if this is what you shoot and this is how you shoot it, it's nothing other than a reflection of your personality and your identity. So it's not because I'm running from something else. It's rather that I'm running towards something more specific. And for me, that is the more, the idealized image of what I think a woman looks like. And again, we've had all sorts of different conversations about this topic, you know, how I don't like it when magazines try to, you know, cram down my throat the idea of like a plus size woman is beautiful. You can't convince me of that. I'll tell you why. Because I don't find plus size women beautiful. I just don't. Just like I don't find men attractive. Just like if you pushed me, when push comes to shove, my preference when it comes to women is for dark features, dark eyes, and dark hair. Like, that's just hardwired into my brain. There's no changing that, right? So on the same token, if you want to ask me, you know, how come you don't shoot bigger girls, or how come you don't shoot men, how come, that's like saying, well, why don't you shoot dogs and children? Well, it's just not what I do. That's something else altogether. You know, it's not my genre. And I get that. Yeah, I can shoot male portraiture, and I can shoot, you know, non young model women portraiture, but that's just not what I do. I do something very, very specific. All the pictures on my walls, they sing a very harmonious tune for the most part. I mean, yeah, you know, there are, I think historically over time, you know, I've explored other things, you know, I've tried different lighting, I've tried different styles, but as I've done this more and more and more in the last year or two, I really think that I've graduated that exploration phase. You know, I think when you're a younger photographer, you ask yourself, well, what do I want to do? You know, it's like the age old question, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then the age old answer is, well, I don't know. But it's, as I shoot more and more, I just let the thing become itself. I'm not trying to guide anything and manipulate it into any certain direction. And you guys know that I'm not terribly easily influenced externally. I don't look at magazines. I really don't like looking through Instagram and whatnot. So whatever it is that's coming out is just coming from my preference and style. Whatever it is that, you know, I like shooting, and it covers everything, you know, whether I'm shooting length or short, small crops, or am I shooting her with, is the model looking into the camera, or is the model looking away? Is the model the focal piece or the centerpiece of the picture? Do I shoot in black and white? Do I shoot in color? What kind of color do I use if I process? What is she wearing? What is she not wearing? All these things kind of dictate, not kind of, they do. They dictate the final product. And at every stage of that process, I have a very heavy hand involvement. And that's also why, like right now, I don't let other people do makeup anymore. I do the makeup now. I'm vertically integrating all these processes into my workflow. So now it's model acquisition, it's makeup, wardrobe, shooting, and then retouching, and then of course the you know, putting together the final product, which is largely the responsibility of the editor. You know, I do that too, of course. Now, it becomes a very specific way of putting together an entire portfolio, and becomes very much my style. I couldn't shoot anybody else's style, and it's very difficult for them to shoot my style. That being said, in my workshops, what I try to teach is really the workflow and the ideas, the thought process of how I make these decisions, right? I'm not, that doesn't mean that you have to make the same decisions as I make, because I don't think you'll make those same types of decisions, right? Because you will want something different. But I think it does uncover the fact that you have to think about these things. Do you want to have this conversation with the model? And if you do, what are you going to say? And if you do say it, then why do you say it? What is the final result? What does that do for you? And so these are the types of questions that it's just a very, very general idea of the kind of thoughts that run through my mind, because it's like being a showrunner for, you know, anything. You are the beginning and end of every part of that process. And so my preference for model is someone that I actually don't have to talk to, because if I have someone that I'm entirely comfortable with and who can maintain the energy and then deliver on the looks, then I can more concentrate on the angles and the more photographic elements of what I do, rather than trying to figure out if she's happy with the shots and the silly things that are more psychological. The psychological hand-holding is a huge part of what I do, but it's not the best, it's not the most fun part of my job. It's actually one of the most tedious parts of my job. And I think it's just unnecessary friction. I think it's an efficiency loss as a process is concerned. So my element is not to really talk to anybody and to let me get lost in that moment where I'm thinking about all these little different floating pieces and I'm trying to combine them. It is a strange and unique process. I'm sure that everybody has their own, but you know, in a nutshell, if I'm looking at wardrobe or lack thereof, and I'm looking at lighting and I'm looking at her look, her height, her features, the type of shot selection that I'm offered given this particular background and versus the types of shots that I think that would really create a more complete story. These are things, and then also the timing of it all, right? If I shoot natural light, I have to be aware, acutely aware of where the sun is right now and where the sun's going to be in about, let's say, 20 minutes or whenever the hell it is that I want to shoot. So it's really logistics. It's a logistics game that it's very, very scientific and mathematical. But all that being said, there is some part of it that is just by gut feel. There are guys who read, the model I was talking to said that one of the photographers she talked to loves reading calculus. I don't love reading calculus. That's not what I do in my off time. I'm not that mathematically inclined, but that is the basis and foundation for how I make my decisions when it comes down to composition or lighting and whatnot. I just don't do it by the numbers. Like, I don't necessarily read light meters. In fact, most of you guys know I don't like light meters because it creates a dependency on a formula. And as much as I believe in formulas, I believe you have to improvise. And I believe you have to be able to pivot, improvise, shift, throw out the whole script altogether sometimes to get the shot that you should be getting, not the shot that you wanted to get. The shot that you should get at that point in time is oftentimes different than the shot that you had in your head. So if you can't be in the moment, and that is part of that living and shooting in the moment, and I just need silence, and I don't need like audible, like an auditory silence. I don't need to put earmuffs on. What I need is mental clarity. I need to not have to clutter my brain with other things like language and trying to play psychological games for strategy reasons and whatnot. I'll do that if I have to, but that is taxing. What I'm trying to do is assemble a lot of pieces that are oftentimes the same pieces, right? It's always wardrobe, hair, makeup, model, lighting, background, and then sequence of shots. And, you know, I mean, these are the photo, the basic foundations of photographic elements that I'm afforded every single time I shoot. Those things don't change. You can make it more complicated. You can make it simpler. I tend to gravitate towards stripping things apart, unnecessary pieces, unnecessary parts, getting rid of all the stuff like makeup artists, stylists, location managers, agencies, agents, everything that I can get rid of, I'll get rid of, because that allows me to be pure in my process. And that's how I know I'm not running away. I'm running towards creating the style that I create. If you let me be, if you let me alone, and you just give me someone who's very pliable, very, you know, compliant, and will allow me to just be me and be comfortable shooting the way that I want to shoot, the results are generally better than if you try to control the process and tell me that, oh, you need to, like models always, oh, well, can we get, you know, more shots with clothes on? I hate that. You know, that's not why you agree to shoot with me. I hope not, at least, because first of all, I don't know the first thing about clothes. I actually don't even think I'm a fashion photographer anymore, the more I think about it. And that's a totally another conversation maybe that I'll save for another day. But as I'm on topic and on point and my mind is a little bit clearer now, the truth is there's too much going on. But if you let me be very comfortable, then I become confident. And as I'm confident, then I take my time. And as I take my time, and I'm not burdened. I'm unburdened by the types of things that really hold me back or that hold my processes back. So when I'm looking for models to shoot, that's one of the things I look for, you know. And when I'm looking for engagements, such as like working with agencies versus working with someone who hits me up, or versus working with someone who I solicited, I will always find the one that gives me the most room and freedom to breathe and to grow and to do whatever it is that I want. Now, I don't always have incredible ideas. I don't always come to the table with amazing new concepts. In fact, I largely repeat a lot of the same things that I do well, but I do them again and I do them again, and I do them to the point where I don't want to do them anymore. But if, as long as I want to do them, I'm still learning and I'm still growing. Like that studio that I shoot in, that little space, it's about 1,000 square feet, but there's still stuff to be yielded, stuff that I can't consistently get perfect. And so, and also the fact that, you know, being in that space, I'm entirely way more comfortable than I am when I'm always looking over my shoulder to see if some random dude is looking down the bridge and, you know, spying on our shoot. I mean, how many times have I encountered random dudes be like, hey, can I watch? And when you tell them no, they just like walk 10 feet and they just keep watching, right? That's something that I don't want to deal with, right? Because I'm not typically the type of dude who's very egregious about nudity in public. As I've said in another podcast, I'm very shy about that thing. I'm much more self-conscious about that than even the model is. So my process is simple. The lighting thing, I don't choose to not use lights because I don't want to use lights. It's much more of an evolution of, well, I can walk a lot farther. I can get to where I want to go quicker. I can set up faster. I can get a shot faster. I don't, right? Even onboard flash is sometimes too much trouble because I still, you know, for the flashes that I use, actually, I should probably get a Sony one. I'm currently using my Nikon one on my Sony A7 R2. But because of that, I don't get the in-camera through the lens, the TTL features. So I don't have like dynamic power control given the distance, given the aperture. Everything is very manual. So that's something that's an unnecessary friction that I could get rid of. So the pictures speak for themselves. It's funny, one of the other things, and this is, I don't know if this is entirely related, but the model said, you know, she's like, you know, you're very different because you don't try to be cool. And I said something like, I'm like, dude, I wear cargo pants. If I wanted to be cool, I would not be wearing cargo pants. And this was actually a reference to a joke. Last week I asked the model, I said, how come none of the gay guys hit on me? And she goes, Charles, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but you wear cargo pants. And a guy who wears cargo pants basically is saying, I don't care how I look. So, yeah, and I was like, and she's like, she kept going. She's like, yeah, I get it. You know, the pockets are really, really useful and all, but dude, they're cargo pants. And I was like, damn, that really did hurt my feelings. I don't know if I apologize if I've told that story, but I don't believe I have. So this should be new. So that's the cargo pant reference. But what was I saying? Yeah, so she's saying that I was, you know, she's making some reference to, I guess, you know, my mannerism, which you guys know. I mean, I'm pretty straightforward. I don't really hold any punches. She liked the fact that I was honest and, you know, I spoke with candor. But, you know, I said something to the effect in response. I said, you know, you're here, you're in my studio. And the studio, the way it looks, it speaks for itself. Furthermore, I have a body of work that speaks for me as well. On top of which, you know, several of the images are hanging up on the wall. So they speak for me. There isn't anything that I could say about myself that my images haven't already said. And so this is kind of a reference back to stylistic choice of what it is that I shoot and how I shoot it and why is it that I do it this way. It is by choice and it's by design. And in so many ways, I'm fated to and destined to do it this way because I really can't do it any other way. Actually it is. I physically can't. That's like telling an alcoholic not to drink. It's just what alcoholics do. That's what they do. They drink. So if you wanted me to stop shooting girls, I'd just stop shooting altogether. You know, if you wanted me to stop shooting natural light and be like, hey, Charles, you really ought to do this. Take a strobe out, you know, take your parabolic umbrella. I'm like, dude, why? I've done that. I've graduated from that and evolved to this. Not to say there's anything wrong with parabolic umbrellas. I love them. I think they have a unique look, but it isn't where I am right now. And so to artificially introduce that into my work, like, that's, I think, something, if you look at people's work and you see that they're all over the place, what you're really seeing is that they have lots of ideas that span very, very different realms. And unfortunately, I think that a lot of times that's a result of external influence. Like, if you see a guy with great photography skills, but he's doing color, then he's doing like moody black and whites, and then he's doing really soft like backlit stuff, and then he's doing, you know, this and that style, like, what you're really seeing is someone who's being pulled in lots of different directions because they can't find who it is, who they are. And although I always suggest photographers, you guys should always, you know, learn how to copy other people, I think people eventually, some people get stuck in that. They make that their career of copying. They become career copycats. But that's not the point. The point is you copy so you learn the skill sets, but you take those things with you. Like when Bruce Lee learned karate or kung fu and, you know, Muay Thai, he took all the best things from each art and then created his own martial art. He called it Jeet Kune Do. And that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to follow someone else's footsteps when it comes to stylistic preference. That's like asking someone else, hey, what do I want to eat for lunch? How's anybody else supposed to know what you want to eat for lunch? Go make your own goddamn decision. But I'm not trying to berate anybody for copying. I think it's great, but you gotta leave the nest. You gotta fly the coop. So damn it. I mean, this is all stream of consciousness stuff, but I mean, I generally try to stay on point. And, you know, the point of it is originally when I was talking about this, you know, this model, as far as, you know, telling me, you know, how can you be so cool? I'm not cool. I'm not cool at all. That's the thing, but I don't need to be. I largely find fluff really, really annoying. I've met photographers that are more fluff than anything, than any substance. And so I've always hated that, because talk is really cheap, right? I can't tell you how good of a photographer I am. How far is that going to get me? If I tell you I'm amazing, I'm a Mario Testino, I might trick one model into shooting with me, but can I trick two? Probably not. That's one of the reasons why I've always been very fascinated by anybody who's like historically. I had this one time, actually two times, model, two different models on two separate occasions would tell me, can't wait to shoot with you on Saturday. And I'm like, did I forget that we're shooting on Saturday? And I look through her profile. I'm like, I probably wouldn't agree to shoot with this girl. So I'm like, I always assume that I made the mistake, and I'll be like, have we been talking, and can you screenshot like our correspondence? Like, I've totally forgotten it, and I apologize if I've forgotten, blah, blah, blah. And so a couple times, you know, they send me back like screenshots of our supposed conversation. Turns out it's not me. It's not even me talking to them. It's just some random imposter. And so the reason why this is relevant, I'm like, okay, this is really strange, because what, you're going to show up? And I, even though, you know, you don't know what I look like, but you're going to shoot with this guy, right? Like, say Saturday. And then what's going to happen? Is he going to publish that work under my name? Or is he like, how's this supposed to work? Because it very quickly, I mean, unless he's a really good copycat, I think that's and why would you create and help someone else's reputation, right? That seems so backwards. Like, everybody wants to help themselves. Like, I wouldn't shoot under someone else's name. If I'm good, I'd shoot under my name. But if I'm trying to get other girls based on someone else's reputation, then I have to use these pictures to then support that photographer. That's terrible. That's so backwards. Like, you're losing out on all the benefits of creating your own persona. So the reason I bring all that up is because it's such a short-term gain. Like, if I told you I was a good photographer, how long would that last? It's also one of the other things I can never figure out is, like, if you, like, the games that guys play on Instagram when they're sending pictures of themselves, or God forbid, dick pics, and like, I'm like, does that ever work? Has that ever worked once? And the thing that leaves me scratching my head is, God, I guess it has to work, or, you know, otherwise, why would you keep doing it? Or have they gotten lucky before with maybe, you know, just one off chance? Or maybe that's not even what they're after. They're trying to just evoke a reaction. I don't know. But again, that's not my preferred way of communication. I can only leave that for them and just guess and form random conjectures as to their MOs and why they do what they do. But the point is, the pictures, they say, they speak for me. So there isn't anything that I could say that hasn't been said. There isn't anything I can say to you that would be not true. I can't trick you into shooting with me, because then the pictures belie the truth. They belie my real intention. So, and then also whatever it is that you hear from other models and other photographers that have ever interacted with me. And if you really, really so chose to do so, you could do all the research you would need on me, and you would find out that this is how I talk and this is how I sound. And I'm not pretentious, unfortunately. On some level, I wish I were. On some level, I really am jealous and envious of guys who can pretend to be some other fake character and be this magnet or this, you know, larger than life figure. And I think it is all a show. I think that there is a large production element to being present and shooting these people and then trying to create in that person's mind, you know, some perception of who you are, but that's just not how I roll. So So I let the pictures do the talking. I don't need I don't need cheerleaders to stand behind me and go rah rah rah, shoot with Charles. It's largely why I don't really hang out on Instagram too much. You know, I put out pictures, and if you see the pictures and you form some sort of conclusion about me based upon what you see. Now, getting back to that, stylistically, one of the things I found lately is, and this gets to be very splitting hairs and nitpicky, but this has to do with earlier when I was talking about how some people, they have, you know, they'll shoot different lighting, they shoot different styles, and then what I think is really they're just getting pulled every which way from Sunday and they can't really form their own identity. One of the things I've noticed about my own Instagram, at least for the last, let's see here, at least for the last, wow, that's a lot of pictures. 16 pictures, no, 12, 13, 14. About 14 pictures, the last 14 pictures that I've posted have been black and white. Now, I'll say I've never done this before, and I didn't do it by design, but after seeing 14 pictures straight in black and white and appearing, you know, very, giving my Instagram, you know, kind of this portfolio, I guess you could say it's a portfolio, right? But this kind of the overview of what I do, giving my Instagram a very consistent look and feel has been kind of nice. And I've always kind of liked that about some of these collection accounts where it's like, oh, black and white fashion or model black and white. And so all they do is they just kind of collect black and white pictures. One of the things I really appreciate about that is that it's again, it's consistent. So even though I think there are a couple pictures here. Yeah, the lighting's all different, right? So I use some hard light. No, let's see. Any hard light pictures in these? No. Actually, a hard light picture has not appeared in black and white in the last 14 or whatever images. So it's all been either backlit or soft lit, ambient lit, diffuse lit, nothing that's hard lit and no hard flashes. So, so because it's all been created and curated by me, it has a very consistent look, and I actually really like that. And I think in no other point in history that I've been a photographer have I been able to create such consistent results in a very selective point in time. I think I went through a color phase earlier, I want to say. Yeah, I think there was a while earlier this year when everything was color, but that didn't strike me as funny because that's color, I think, is more, I kind of think black and white is the exception rather than the rule. So if I shoot all color, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised because, you know, most pictures are in color. I think the black and white is more of the exception, but producing 14 black and white pictures in a row and then putting them out there creates for a very, very consistent look and feel that I kind of appreciate. I don't know how long this will last. And this kind of actually bothers me because now if I think about, now like the next color image is going to shatter and ruin the previous however X number of pictures that you've released in black and white. And so that becomes its own thing where it becomes now there's pressure to only produce black and white pictures, but it's not on purpose. It's just that it works out that way, you know, and sorry, hang on 1 second. Gotta respond. Yeah. So it creates its own thing, but it wasn't by design. It wasn't purposely trying to create only black and white pictures. I think it just happened to be, you know, it just happened to be that, you know, you go through phases, and I think it's great to let these phases run its course. So like a lot of the shots that, actually every single shot that I've done in black and white has been done at my studio. Oh, I'm sorry, except one. And of course, the studio is large, and I'm going upstairs and outside and whatnot. So it's not like everything's done within the 1,000 square feet. But being in that comfortable place, like I said, I'm rinsing and repeating a lot of my so-called experiments and just getting better at it. And then I'm still trying to infuse some element of surprise, some element of newness, so that I'm not getting bored. And as long as I can keep doing this, I'll keep shooting there until I really, really get upset about being there anymore. Or I'll start shooting in more of the public places within the building altogether. Maybe in the hallways, maybe in the library, maybe in the pool room or wherever. But as long as I can create something that is still interesting to me, which is basically at the end of the day what it all boils down to, if it keeps my interest going, if it keeps my you know, juices flowing, creative juices flowing, I'll keep doing that. But yeah, I mean, 7 years down the line, my style is kind of set in stone. I don't really see my personality, my stylistic personality, changing a whole lot going forward. And it's not because of fear. It's rather because of, I guess, more because of greed, you know, of what I want to do, of what I'm drawn to. So the conclusion is, I am what I am, not because I say it and not because I think it. It's not what I'm telling you. I'm actually back solving. I'm looking at everything that I've done in the past and trying to draw some sort of conclusion from a third party perspective. And then I'm telling you that this is the result, because the actions speak louder than words. It doesn't matter what I tell you. It's just like I could tell you. It's just like earlier I was saying, I could lie to you. I could tell you anything you want to hear. But at the end of the day, the pictures, they are the final product. They are the end of the line. They are what I am. And more so, they are what I am than I even know, right? So a lot of this process, even podcasting, why I talk through this microphone, is trying to figure out by reverse engineering, okay, here are the pictures. Now, what the hell happened? How did I get here? What did I do? Why did I do it? And a lot of these processes are very hidden. They're very non-transparent, right? And I'm not non-transparent in the terms of like, oh, I'm trying to hide and I'm trying to be not genuine. But I mean, like, they're hidden processes, just like when you're using your computer and your OS, your operating system, is doing stuff. But there's a lot of mechanisms and scripts and programs that run things that you can't see on the surface. I don't understand how it all works, certainly not from a computer engineering level for operating systems, but I have to try and figure out what it is that makes me tick. And then if I can figure that out, then I can hopefully better express myself through the images and try to push myself in the right direction rather than kind of stumble blindly. But the reality is, it is much more of a blind stumbling in the dark and trying to figure out, who the hell am I in the dark? Yeah, I'm stumbling. At this time, I'm still, in some ways, I'm still stumbling, but I'm stumbling in a much more narrow hallway, if that makes any sense. I'm not stumbling in a very large, empty auditorium anymore. I'm stumbling down a very narrow hallway, but it's still dark. I'm still trying to figure things out, but at least I have some sort of general direction of where I'm going. And that is fun, and that's fun to talk about, and I think that really it really behooves all of us to spend some time to really try to figure out who we are as not only photographers but also people and how we operate. But never be mistaken. Like, the actions always belie the truth. The actions, the final product, the pictures, what you do. So I don't really care too much about what people say, right? And I mean, God, I don't want to borrow politics, but I don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. He talks a bunch of shit. Nobody knows what he's going to do. I mean, you can only hope that he stands for the policies that he talked about during his campaign. But the truth is, that guy will say anything to win. And on some level, I really envy that. On some level, I think he's a piece of shit. But that's beyond the point altogether. The point is, actions speak louder than words. All right, I'm going to end this here. You guys go think about what it is that I've said or not said, or, you know, what I am or what I'm not. But really, more importantly, I think it is, you guys spend some time and think about who you are and how your image is, what they say about you, and what you maybe not know what they say about you. Actually, that's a great topic for the next one. What do my images say about me that I am not aware of? So if I looked at it from a third person perspective, even more so than, you know, in this podcast, what would I surmise or what would I conclude about this person, about this photographer? That will be the next podcast, probably. There are actually a couple of themes from this podcast that can really grow legs. But yeah, you guys should think about what you guys do and how you do it and why you do it. All right, peace.